get a little baseball in here. Just as a shot in the middle of the week. Yeah. They're going to the West Coast. They won another series. They are where they are. They're holding their mountain bobbleheads up to the Simba gods and, trying to, this thing with the UCL, I mean, it feels like after a couple of days, fans almost get Christmassy about it. Like, well, maybe he's not really, maybe he'll come back. Maybe they haven't said anything. And so there's a little bit of that. And I'm like, and he's showing up and he's out there smiling and in the dugout and, part of the television package, he isn't home crying. I don't know. What do you know? You're around the team more. I mean, I think when they say UCL, I say he shouldn't pitch this year. If he had an agent or a mother or a father, they'd say, no matter if you can win the World Series without him, give him a ring, but don't F his arm up for life, right?
Well, it's already messed up. I mean, that's part of the issue. I'll go back to what I said to you a few days ago. And look, there's been nothing new from the team, at least, in the early days of the week and, during the White Sox series. I think part of it is you are trying to gather as much information as you can. You're trying to solicit opinions, second opinions, third opinions. But I'll go back to what I said really from Jump Street when they announced, when Mike Elias talked to us in the dugout on Saturday, this past weekend, and right off the bat says some degree of injury to the UCL. That's not a good sign in terms of where this is heading. I've covered plenty of pitchers, plenty of situations where a pitcher, the end result ultimately was that pitcher getting Tommy John. And if there's more wiggle room, if there's less certainty about it, if it's kind of, 50-50, let's say, for lack of a better way of describing it, they don't throw out UCL. They'll just say the elbow, there's some inflammation, but we don't think there's structural damage. We're going to shut them down for a while. The PRP injections were all the rage for a while in terms of pitchers getting a platelet-rich plasma injections to try to help healing. I remember the Orioles doing that with Dylan Bundy.
Damn, you're like a doctor. You're almost like a Lewis Yoakam at this point here. You're Dr. James Andrews Jones is what,
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not quite. But my point is they very much try to avoid using the term UCL. Until it gets to the point where they know that that's where it's heading. The fact that they mentioned it right away, I think most people, and I think most fans recognize it's probably where this thing is heading. I think the difference here is, given the timing, we're almost to September, right? We're late August, early September. The regular season has 1 month to go. We're at a point now where even if Felix Bautista got Tommy John surgery later today or tomorrow or the day after that,
he's missing next year.
His next year's gone anyway, barring like a miraculous recovery. I mean, Tommy John on the short end is 12 months, that John Means had it last April. And now he did have a setback that had a back muscle issue that slowed him down in the middle of the, back in May or whenever it was.
They were saying when that happened, you and I were saying all-star break on John Means. That's what we felt like. And it's 6 weeks later and he's pitching. He's pitching.
Right. So. I mean, the original best case scenario for John Means was regarded as maybe June or July. And then in May, he had the muscle issue in his upper back. And that's what pushed it back to August and him pitching for the Orioles in September, the way it looks like it's probably going to, we're going to see him, just going to be what it looks like and how he fits
in. Talk about a dream scenario that we would talk about them being 35 games over 500 without John Means and having him come back into the situation in September. I mean, if we would have said that in March, I'd have taken that.
Well, how about that? DL Hall not being a factor in the rotation whatsoever. Now he's back in the bullpen. Grayson Rodriguez struggling to the point where they sent him to the minors. And
now he looks like Cy Koufax at this point, right? Like for a while.
He and Bradish have been their best starters. I mean, Bradish has been the ace. I mean, he's been that good since April. He was choppy. He got hit on the foot in his first start and had to go to the IL. But since then, he's been one of the best pitchers in the American League. I mean, look at the numbers. The numbers support that. So, but Grayson Rodriguez has been right there with him. Those two guys right now, Nestor, if I say name your postseason starting rotation, everyone's going to say those two guys. And very likely Kramer, third. But the point is, what they've had, where they are right now, going back to what you just said, knowing that John Means wouldn't be a factor until September, and even then, we don't know if he's going to be much of a factor anyway. And what happened with with Grayson Rodriguez, DL Hall.
And dude, if they're going to win the World Series, Cano's going to have to be the guy, right? I mean, he came out, got a couple extra outs on Thursday night. Like, that's what they're going to have to do and pray, right? I mean, and figure it out, because they don't have a closer. He's next man up. And the same way that when we got rid of Lopez last year, Batista stepped up. So you cross your fingers and say, if Cano can pitch the way he did in May for 3 weeks in October,
yeah,
they can win the World Series.
It certainly helps. And now I'll also say, you still need guys to step up to replace what Cano used to be. Because I said that about Felix Batista last year when he stepped into Jorge Lopez's role. Part of the problem the Orioles had late last year, even though they almost made the playoffs and they were a great story and they fought and they competed, they missed Felix Batista in the eighth inning last year when that happened, because he was pitching the ninth then. So, you know, the point is, yeah, Cano is going to handle most of the closing duties. I do think, and we saw him on Tuesday night, Danny Coulomb, big outs. He gets lefties out. He also gets righties out. He's pitched well for them. I think DL Hall will factor in there. Jacob Webb has done a nice job for them. We'll see about Fujinami. I mean, the confidence meter seemed to be creeping back up. And then, well, what happened on Tuesday where he's pitching in a 9-run game or 8-run game, and he made you nervous in the ninth inning. So, you know, but the point is, Tyler Wells is going to be in that mix once he's recalled from the minors, because they're grooming him to be a reliever now the rest of the year. So the point is, they have options. Are any of those guys as dominant as Felix Batista? No, of course not. But there have been scenarios in the past, and you can even look at, you know, I've heard someone mention, I think of the 2013 Red Sox, you know, were an example of that. They lost their closer that season. And, you know, you'll find examples where things like that will happen to a team and someone else has to step up. And really, it needs to be multiple people stepping up. You know, it comes down to, yeah, Cano has to be the Cano we saw in May and June. And you really would like to see DL Hall be able to pitch high leverage for them. And you'd like to see Tyler Wells do that. And, you know, we'll see if Jacob Webb can continue what he's done. Danny Coulomb's been good. Give CNL Perez credit. You know, so many people, and probably including myself, if I'm being honest, were ready to DFA him back in late May or June. And, you know, he's, since he had the arm issue earlier in the summer, he's pitched really, really well. You know, he had a little bit of a reset and he's been really good for them. So the point is, the bullpen, while you're missing your stud, and there's no replacing him, because Felix Batista was the best reliever, best closer in baseball this year. There's a reason why he was getting Cy Young consideration. That's how good he was. But you're not replacing that, but you still have some other arms that are interesting in that bullpen. And by the way, I'll also throw this out there. Go take a look at what the starter numbers are since the All-Star break. They don't get as deep in the games as some other rotations. I get that, but their starting pitching has been much better of late. You know, really since the All-Star break, it's been much improved. And that's even with Kyle Gibson not being great and Jack Flaherty kind of being a flop so far, you know. So, but they've gotten really good work from Bradish, Grayson Rodriguez, Dean Kramer, and Cole Irvin's pitched well for them as well since they went to a 6-man rotation. So, you know, they're in a position where I certainly think they can survive not having Batista getting to October, and I think they can still win the division. I mean, my goodness, the Rays have had all kinds of injuries as well. So it's not as though the Orioles are, you know, down on their luck here. The Rays have had all kinds of things happen all from a health standpoint, not even getting into the Wander Franco thing and how ugly that is. But, you know, October, not having Batista in the ninth inning, yeah, that hurts. I mean, there's no way to downplay that, but we'll see how this bullpen takes shape here over the last month of the season. And I do think there is some potential there to get some meaningful contributions from some guys who, you know, frankly, haven't been in the bullpen all year, but, you know, DL Hall, Tyler Wells, right off the bat, those are two guys that I'm really going to be watching closely here over the next 4 weeks or so, because I do think they can help them, you know, in an ensemble effort to replace Felix Batista.
My pal Joe Enoch has been sharing every day, like 29 for Ken Singleton, 28, you know, magic number days, yeah, as we go through this. I just, around baseball, watching Anaheim Angels, like, try to give half away their team away. Yeah. I think the American League West, that's like a total cat fight with these three teams right now, makes it interesting. We play Arizona this weekend. They're on that step ladder of trying to make it. I mean, they're going to be playing hard this weekend. Mm-hmm. They're playing for their lives. And there's a mix of that. There, you know, for every White Sox team that throws a starter out there on Tuesday night or Monday night that shoves the bats up your backside, and you're like, whoa, I thought you guys were out of this. It really is about what pitchers they're going to see the rest of the way, where they go. And even if they saw the Anaheim Angels next week, if they saw a healthy Ohtani, that would make it a much tougher night. They're not going to see that. And obviously, by the time the Orioles get to Anaheim on Tuesday night, the place is going to be on fire.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what an odd scenario where you put all those players on waivers and, you know, talking about the luxury tax threshold and saving money and all. But from a competitive standpoint, it's been interesting. And I saw a couple people make this point. There's been so much talk, you know, whether we were talking about the Astros and Cubs years ago, the Orioles when they were in the midst of their rebuild, you know, where you'd hear people talk about, you know, these, you know, stripped down to the screws, bare bones rebuild scenarios, and people talking about that being bad for baseball. And look, I'm not going to sit here and say that multi-year rebuilds are fun or good for the game or anything like that. Sometimes they're necessary. But what the Angels did, I mean, you want to talk about a bad for baseball scenario where you just flat out put good players on waivers because you want to try to save money. You know, I'll be interested to see what, you know, what this looks like in terms of the union and grievances potentially. And it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But I guess all these guys are going to be available and we're going to see teams put in claims and teams trying to block so-and-so from
getting. If you're talking about team competitive, I'll get fresh with you right now. And I thought about this the other night with the Orioles, like, just, they're really good. I said to my wife, we're making dinner, I'm like, this might be the best team I've ever seen them have, because it's been put together with like raw players. This isn't, yep, David Wells and we're going to sign Jimmy Key or Rafael Palmer, right, or Alomar, or even
not the hired guns, right,
the late 70s where they made the deal for McGregor and Dempsey and, you know, sort of fleeced them and, mm-hmm, and the Yankees at that time and did what they did. But the Orioles were the team not signing players then. They were the ones not giving Don Baylor money, not giving Reggie Jackson money, not giving Wayne Garland money, not giving Bobby Critch money, not giving Doug DeSantis. I'm just going through their whole 1977 team. Sure. That was all gone by 1980. You know, like, so, and we're playing against them in the 79 and playoff. So I would just say for this team, I thought about this the other night and I thought, wow, this is amazing. And I'm thinking, and they're all cheap. And I'm like, no, this was really expensive. You had to sit out there for 7 years and watch them lose 110 ball games, and nobody came, and the place was empty. So that's a hell of a cost. Yeah. You want a team this good? We're going to stink for a decade. We're going to stink, be awful, awful for a decade so we can get all the Jackson Holidays and all the and then we'll be good for a while, and then our owner will bitch and try to move the team to Nashville or just cry poor that he can't afford to pay them again after not paying Manny Machado. And Luke, the thing that scares the bejesus out of me is people aren't going, and I'm guilty. I don't want to go give him money. I don't want to go give him $10. My wife and I were down there on Friday night. We were at the Nest. We didn't go to the game. We hung out. We had a beer. You know, we had a pregame beer, and we left. I have a real aversion to handing my credit card over to this pig. Now, next month, when they're playing playoff games here, maybe they'll get $225 out of me to go sit in the upper deck for a game, yeah, that I want to see, game five against Houston. I don't know. Maybe I'll have a press credential that I should have, by the way, because you have one. Why don't I have one? I run the place. So I would just say for them, seeing that nobody's going to the games unless they give out a bobblehead. I mean, it's wonderful to see Saturday night packed, but then you realize, oh, they gave away 15,000 bobbleheads, or 30,000 people pissed that they didn't get one, because I've seen that all over the internet, because they don't prepare for that. People line up on Friday night. It's a big circus. I mean, it's a circus to go get a bobblehead. And I don't, their fan base loves it and they put up with it. They do the $15 beers and they do. But then on Tuesday night, the White Sox come to town and all of a sudden it feels sort of lonely to some degree. And that will be used against us when all this comes down, and it will be used against, well, he already used it with the New York Times 2 weeks ago. We have enough money to, you know, when he's getting gobs of money from the national TV deal, it's really an unbelievable situation that he could be. It's like Major League. He's such a pig. The family's been pigs for 30 years. Now the cat's out of the bag that he's a loser too. And the team's really good and it's really cheap, but I'm thinking, at what cost? This franchise was burned to the ground for a decade in order to make it decent again.
5 years. Let's it was 5 years. You know, 2018 through 2000. You know, it was a 5 year. 2017 through 21. They
Fair
made the,
enough.
You can't say it's a decade because they made the playoffs.
They
three,
were spending
three of
money
years.
On players in 14, 15. It's not on Machado, but they had payroll again. The payroll came back when they got good.
Sure.
At that time, John had nothing to do with the team then. He wasn't. I mean, Peter gave the money to Chris Davis.
Right.
John was around. Chris Davis might still be on welfare. I don't know. But because John ain't going to give money out. I mean, obviously, that's, you know, if it was about signing Rutschman and Henderson, other teams might have gotten that done at 30 games over 500 right here and now. You know, this would be a real good time to do something for the fans, including the lease itself. That he's not taking $600 million of free money that he could earmark and move numbers around and say, well, there's $1.25 for Rutschman, and there's $1.25 for Henderson. Let's put him on the wall, and let's see how the next 5 years go. And if it doesn't go, hey, be mad at me. Be mad at my old man, whatever, but we tried. You know, like the decision-making all begins now with money, and that's what I talked about with you last month with Elias never having to go down the hallway and ask John for money and what happens the first time he does that. You know, Elias read the New York Times last week, too.
Yeah, no question about it. I don't disagree with anything you just said. I just wanted to clarify that, you know, the rebuild wasn't a decade because they were good during the Buck era and Duquette.
Dude, I'm still pissed about 98 through 2012. I lived
no
that
doubt. No,
so anybody my age and your age lived through that, too, that they got lucky to be good from 12 to 16. Like,
Duquette, I don't disagree.
Duquette pulling Duquette out of the Cape Cod Penal League and Buck coming in here and not having anything to do with analytics and going old school and fudging it together with Machado showing up and a couple pitchers working out because Duquette was a little bit of a weird genius about baseball as well. I see 35 games under 500 and nobody at the ballpark a lot of nights, and I still like, you know, I wonder, I sit here and bitch to my wife all night about it. I'm like, well, they had 3.5 million people, but that was before the Nationals came and they split the fan base and they pissed everybody off. And there's people like me. My last name's Aparicio. I ordered a $75 Chicago White Sox jersey from 1969 yesterday that I'm going to wear that I loved on the 1970 baseball card. I've been eyeing it. It's always $400. I found some. I hope it doesn't show up like the purple Flaccos did, or like the blue Flaccos, I should say. But I ordered a jersey. Like, I love baseball, but I spent money on the internet buying a jersey before I'll get John Angelo's money, because that's how I feel about it. I don't know why other people aren't going. I was in Pasadena doing the show Tuesday, and it's lost upon me how many Trump voters there are, or Trumpians there are, who just hate the city. I mean, they hate everything about the city. They watch Fox News nonstop, and they're just not coming. And they might not even come down for a World Series game, because by then, I had people talking to me about playoff games. I'm like, you better get your credit card out. You know, I mean, $10 nights for playoff games, because it's going to be expensive to go to the games. The people that are going down there, like Ed Lauer, and sitting in the $80 seats and showing up on TV every night and getting in on their orange $60 a month club plan, it's going to be a different crowd in the postseason, or they're going to have to mortgage their Christmas. Because I just would love to see the enthusiasm be as large as I know it can be for the team. And I think that might be impossible with the owner.
Well, look, first of all, I think the enthusiasm is very large, but I don't think that always equates to people being in the ballpark, because we've talked about the home viewing experience and everyone's paying for Masson, right?
I'm not seeing flags, though. I mean, you know what I mean? I'm not seeing orange flamingos yet. I want to see
a lot of
swell.
See, first of all, that's anecdotal anyway. So what you see compared to what I see, or, you know, it's hard
Towson.
To quantify.
You know,
that.
I live
right, right. It's hard to quantify that. I mean, I've said to you for months now, just my text chain with all my high school friends that I played football with, I would say one guy in that group, and it's a group of about 10 of us, one other guy in that group is a hardcore baseball fan.
Okay, how many of the other nine have been to a game recently?
I don't know, but what I will say is they are all watching much more closely than they have in a long time.
Well, I'm watching and not going. I'm, you know, I didn't count it in the stands there. I'm watching every night. So I am guilty of that. Yes.
So I think part of what we have to understand here, and we talked about this in the middle of the rebuild. You know, we talked about this when we could see the farm system rankings creeping back up and seeing that, okay, they are stocking some talent and they do have some guys on the way. And it's not just the Orioles talking this up. Other people around baseball are taking notice. We said it though. This wasn't going to be like a light switch in terms of everyone's back and suddenly it's 1997 again and the ballpark's packed every night. First and foremost, I don't think that's ever happening, you know, and part of that has to do with just the reality of how we consume sports today. And obviously the Nationals, I think that ship has sailed and is not coming back.
But the one thing I said flippantly to my wife, because you just said the N word, right? When the Nationals were winning, they sold a lot of tickets every time, you know, when the Nationals were good during that Strasburg, you know, their period. I'm not talking about in September when we're going to win a world, when they lost awful playoff games to the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. I sat on a road trip bus and watched them just piss away a game five when they should have advanced, right? Like, I watched them have hard luck losses and then come back the next year. And every time I saw them, I thought, oh, man, the Orioles are in trouble because they're selling tickets. And the Orioles were selling tickets then, 12, 13, yeah. 14, 15. There were 5 million people going to baseball games in the corridor during that period of time. And I'm thinking to myself, the Nationals didn't have any problem selling tickets when it got good. The Phillies didn't have any problem selling tickets when it got good. We're in a different market. It's a smaller market. It's a beaten up market. I don't give them money because the owner's a dick and he's been one to everybody I know on behalf of everybody. I don't give him money. So I have a strong, and then there's the city and the Trump stuff and like all that that goes on about going to the ballpark that maybe they don't have in South Philly. I don't know. The Nationals stadium was built in the worst neighborhood of all time that they've turned into one of the most expensive zip codes in the world, literally, by putting a baseball stadium there, strangely enough. But people came. And that is a concern of mine. You can excuse away the city and this and that. Prices, $10 to go to the ballpark. It was $60 to go all month. You know, so I don't know that it's price. And I got into that here long before you came into my life 20 years ago when people stopped going and I'm on the radio every day. It's before they squirted me. It's when I'm trying to help them sell tickets. You know, when I'm doing 3,000 tickets in the upper deck on a Friday night because the Phillies are in town and Wild Bill's out doing things drunk and the Bird's there. And like, all, like even then, the hardest part for me to accept on the radio was when Ollie's bargain bin night was $3 or $5 and people weren't going. That was a real tell for me to say tickets are almost free and people aren't going. This team's 35 games over five. They'll never be better than this. Show me a September for even if they're good the next couple of years and they sign these guys, the notion that on September 1st, they will be 35 games over 500 again. I don't know, dude, it's been taking a lifetime to get here. And I know who runs the place. This is as much enthusiasm as they could possibly have right now. This is as good a pennant race. There's a team chasing them. They're going to play 4 games 2 weeks from now that I really hope it feels like the Yankees are in town and it's packed and you don't need to get a bobblehead to show up. But I don't speak for the team in selling tickets. I just see what I witness and know what I hear and know what I feel. I think baseball fans are back. I don't know that they've recruited new people, but then I see young people down there and I'm like, all right, those kids didn't grow up in Eddie Murray. They're there. I see young people having fun down there.
Yeah. Attendance is up, though. Let's be fair about this. I'm looking at it right now. Last year, they averaged 17,005 per game. And again, we know announced numbers, fudging it up, understanding all of that. It's up to 23 this year. Percentage-wise, that's pretty sizable. I think the point I was trying to make, and look, everything you just laid out, that's part of it. And I don't disagree with that from a big-picture standpoint. I guess the point I'm making is I never would have thought or expected that it was going to be like a light switch and everyone's just back. I think it's a dial. I think because of ownership, because of long-term concerns, because you don't have a lease long-term beyond this year, I think there are fans that are excited about the product on the field, but from a financial standpoint, are hesitant to invest in season tickets, for example, because they want to make sure this is real. They want to make sure this sustains. They want to make sure that this, and you're right, they're probably not going to be in a position, even if this rebuild sustains into something that's really good for a decade, they might not be this good record-wise again, or maybe only one other time or two other times. But if it sustains, I think you will see attendance continue to improve. Is it ever going to get to a point where it was in 1997? No, but because of a lot of the reasons that we laid out. But it is up, on average, 5,500 per game. That's meaningful considering how low it was. Now, how much higher it can climb the rest of the year, how much higher that means for next year, what do they do in terms of selling playoff tickets and tying that into season tickets, a down payment for season tickets next year, what do they do in that regard? How resourceful, how savvy, how smart are they and how they market that to try to roll it into more ticket sales for next year? We'll see. I think the jury's out on what they do on that front, but the support is up. But you do have long-term questions about the viability of the franchise, beginning with ownership. And I think, to your point, it's where there are some people that are hesitating. They're doing well on the weekends at this point in time. You look at attendance over the weekend. Friday night, they gave out an Orioles flag. A decent giveaway, but it wasn't something it's not like the Hawaiian shirt or a bobblehead. They drew 28,000 against the Rockies. The Rockies stink. There's no one on the Rockies that anyone in Baltimore is saying, man, I have to go see that guy play. So they drew 28. It's a good crowd. Not great, but good. Certainly better than it was on Friday nights the last couple of years. Saturday, they sold out because they had the Felix Bautista bobblehead. No big shock there. And on Sunday, they didn't give away anything. 30,700. Not great, but not awful. And certainly better than it was last year and much better than it was a few years ago. My point is it is getting better, and I think there is a gradual increase that can continue over the next couple of years. But there are a lot of people who want to see a long-term lease. They want to see investments being made in the team. And that doesn't have to be going out and signing big-time free agents. To your point, extend Gunnar Henderson. I'd like to see that way more than going out and buying a free agent. I'd love to see them sign Gunnar Henderson to a 10-year deal right now, 11-year deal, buy out his first.
What would that cost them? What would the number on that be?
Man, you're putting me on the spot. It would not be cheap. Let's be clear. We're not talking 11 years and, you're going to get them for $80 million. You'd be talking about a 9-figure contract. But when you look at what kind of player he is, when you look at the fact that he's only 22 years old and you would be buying out his first 3 or 4 years of free agency, if you could do something like that and, take him to age 30, age 31, 32, whatever it might be. And look, he might not sign an 11-year deal. It might be that you get him to sign a 9-year deal, whatever. But it's going to be cheap. But relative to what a player like that would be on the open market, it would be a fraction of what it would cost. And he's yours.
Screw around with him for 2 or 3 years. Screw around spring training a year and a half from now if he goes out next year and is an MVP, and he won't sign with you.
Well, and that's part of this.
He'll hang out. We went through this with Lamar on the football side, and unprecedented. With Manny football, Machado, it never gets that way, right?
Yeah, Manny Machado. There's another example. What I would like to see, and look, it may come down to it, and some of these guys, when you're a Boris client and all that, they won't sign, but make the effort. And we've talked about this. We talked about this a lot at the trade deadline. This is all homegrown. It's all affordable. It's great. They've done, Michael Elias and the baseball ops side has done a phenomenal job rebuilding this thing. They really have. But at some point in time, I've talked about that inflection point coming where you're going to have to make ownership, not Michael Elias, ownership is going to have to make a meaningful investment here to get this, to either get this team over the hump in bringing in a big time starter or whatever you want to bring in, or it has to come in the form of extending Gunnar Henderson or extending Adley Rutschman or Grayson Rodriguez or whoever you want it. Take your pick of which guy you want to talk about, because there are plenty of guys that we could at least have a conversation about in that regard, and that's a good thing. But they are going to come to that point where ownership is going to have to take that step. And boy, based on what we've seen to this point, what's my confidence level in that happening? Zero. And I say that as someone who has been very complimentary of their baseball operation side and very complimentary of Mike Elias and Stig Mydell and their scouts and their technology and analytics department and all the different things they're doing that has formed what we're seeing today, which is the best team in the American League and a team that's going to make the playoffs and a team that has a darn good chance to win 100 games for the first time since 1980, which, think about that. It's quite a story, but ownership in terms of doing everything you can to sustain this thing for the long haul like they want to. You know, Michael Elias, there are things he'll be able to do. You know, he can turn the roster and turn the roster over and trade guys when they're 3 or 4 years in and when they get into arbitration and they start to become expensive and you flip them for young players. I mean, the Rays have done that for a long time and they've been good to really good for a long time. But guess what? They haven't gotten over the hump. And part of that is because, well, they play small market baseball and, you know, but even the Rays have extended some players. So there's no excuse for John Angelos and this franchise to say that, well, we're not going to be able to keep Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman. And
well, the old man would do this and he'd say, well, we're trying to extend him, but we couldn't afford, we couldn't get him to sign. Yeah. It's his fault. Yeah. You know, like, I mean, that's the way the old man would do it.
And let's be clear. I'm not even suggesting that they have to keep every single one of them. The Ravens don't keep every single one of their young players. You know, we understand how this is going to work and no one's saying that they need to have a $300 million payroll or will have a $300 million payroll. We know that's not happening. But the point is there is no excuse that you can't keep some of them and then make wise decisions with other guys of when to trade, you know, when to turn over your roster, when you go with a young guy. You know, we're going to see that probably either this offseason or sometime soon. Anthony Santander has been a really good player for them, but he's getting to a point where he's getting closer to 30. He's more expensive at the end. You know,
he's on that Trey Mancini line of and that Adam Jones line of like, all right, we're going to get enough out of you, right?
But on the flip side, they have all this talent in the outfield in the minor leagues. I mean, Heston Kerstad and Colton Cowser are sitting at AAA right now, and I know Cowser struggled, you know, when he was up, but you know, lots of guys. Adley Rutschman struggled. Gunnar Henderson struggled when
Grayson
he was
Rodriguez
called up.
Struggled.
Yeah. So the point is, they have replacements, highly regarded prospects, waiting at AAA to do that. So I'll tell you right now, I'm guessing there's a good chance that Santander is traded this offseason. That doesn't mean I think the Orioles are going to be worse next year. It just means the roster will evolve and change and look different, and that's okay. But if you're going to have to depend on that exclusively to try to be good for the long haul, if that's what Mike Elias is going to have to do, and you're not going to extend anyone,
and you think you're going to beat the Yankees while they're taking Gunnar Henderson from you, that's difficult.
Yeah,
Luke, I got a break, but I want to show you this just to show you what I've been doing with my money instead of giving it to Angelos. This I found this on the internet, right? And this is the 1969, and it has the little patch on the side, and it's a Louis Aparicio like special. And it, you know, once I found that it had my name on the back, because the real jerseys didn't have the names, but they kind of made it tastefully done here, and mm-hmm. It has the 100th anniversary. How could I turn this down? I mean, as a baseball
That's
fan,
neat.
How do I not
That's
wear
awesome.
That for $58 for the rest
That's
of
cool.
my life?
So really I'm really cool.
I'm working on this Oriole jersey. That's an orange 70s. It's the orange 70s that the 79 Orioles wore. And it's an Aparicio 11 on it. So it's kind of, you know, not in the 66. I wish I could get a 66. I got a 66 Palmer giveaway and I'm real happy with that, with the black block lettering on the back. So, you know, I mean, you like to think of yourself as the jersey nerd. I was the original jersey nerd. I had the Pastorini yips in 1973. By the way, Pastorini's coming on next week to talk about
nice.
This. So Luke Jones can be found at Baltimore Luke. He can be found at the ballpark. He can be found at Camden Yards. He can be found at Owings Mills. He's not going to be found anywhere this weekend because the Orioles are out of town. He's going to be Deacon Jones up in Pennsylvania doing the good work up there. And he will be ready for all things training camp conclusion and real season beginning on Wednesday next week as the Houston Texans come to town. Little baseball, little football. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the 15th at Fadley's. Make sure you're listening out for our thing at Pappas. And by the way, new sponsor, Coco's Pub. I'm wearing a Coco shirt. I would show you the colorful bird on the back, but I'll wear it backwards next time I have it on. Get on over to Coco's in Lauraville and tell Marcella we love her. We're going to be doing the show there in a couple of weeks as well, late September, doing the Crab Cake Tour there. I'm Nestor. He's Luke. We are WNST AM 1570. Towson Baltimore. We're going overtime here. Stay with us at Baltimore Positive.